can't get enough of the fan in the morning?
Shown up.
Because this is nothing like that.
Working.
Al and Jerry are here with stories they'd never get to cover on the morning show.
Very sexy robot.
Hey, look at that pig.
Shenanigans.
Naked yoga.
My mother had a bad experience with these goats.
Let's hump the fence.
It's Al and Jerry's post-game podcast.
All right, here we go on a Monday podcast. The boys have left the studio, so here we are. What's up, Al?
Oh, hi there, Jerry. You know, I like to get back to people if they reach out to me on social media.
Sure.
Most people I get, they'll DM me on Twitter or on Instagram. But I just found over the weekend, I didn't realize that on Facebook, if someone messages you on Facebook and you're not friends with them, it gets buried into some spam folder that's like way deep.
Yeah.
I found like a year's worth of
messages.
Yeah. Some of them were very
you
nice people.
Heal.
I tried to respond to the ones that needed responding.
The only thing about that, though, that I do think makes you come off a little bit better, I think they can see if you saw it or not.
Oh, okay.
So I think they will see that it was unread.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
And some of it's just like, hey, what song was that you just played? And it's like, you know, June of 2024. I'm like, huh.
The Goo Goo Dolls.
Not sure about that one. Yeah, then somebody else sent me. Actually, this popped up. Someone sent this to me, and it popped up on my YouTube feed. David Lee Roth performed for the first time in 5 years.
How about that? I saw that, too.
He, I will say the band sounded very good.
How'd he sound?
He sounds like he always sounds, which is like he and this was even in his, when he reunited with Van Halen. He like kind of talks the lyrics, which I don't like.
Got it. Maybe he can't sing anymore.
Yeah, maybe. But he, by the way, he looked great.
And he's what? Late 60s, early 70s?
Oh, he's definitely got to be in his 70s.
70s?
Yeah. He looked terrific. He was wearing all leather. The guy looks in great shape. Good
I just
him.
Saw I David Lee Roth is, his age is, he just turned 70.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you nailed it.
There yeah, he looked great.
I just saw on YouTube, it was, I don't know, it was last month, I want to say. I forget. I don't know where this is, but it was a news piece on a man who's 99 years old and still goes to the gym. You ready for this? Lifts
yeah.
weights for 3 hours a day. He's 99.
Yeah, that seems like a lot.
All with it. This will be you. He's all with it upstairs. He's in phenomenal shape, and he says because he started lifting weights in his 50s. That he clearly has preserved his body and lengthened his lifespan.
Nice.
He looks and he sounds great.
That's awesome.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So maybe David Lee Roth will be singing until he's 99.
Yes, he will be. So you had sent me a video, Jerry, last week about...
Oh, Ramit Sethi.
Yeah, I wrote this down, who it came from, the video.
I will teach you to be rich.
Yes.
Whatever it's called.
That's
yeah.
his YouTube yep. channel. Yep. I will teach you to be rich. You say his name is what?
Ramit Sethi, I believe. Is
it was... You asked me to watch this. It's the classic argument of, will you... Are you better off renting a place or buying a place?
Yeah, and now to be clear, this guy, what he does, I don't know if you looked at his page at all.
I looked at some of it afterwards.
I actually love it. I came across this on, I think there was a piece done on you on Netflix about him, which is where I learned
yes.
of him. That's where I learned of him. And then I'm always got a YouTube page, so I started following him or subscribing, and I've seen a lot of his stuff. And what he does basically is if you have financial issues within your marriage, basically, or a relationship, whatever, you kind of send him all your stuff, and he goes over it with you, and they kind of work out a plan. And some of the stuff is pretty straightforward. Some is very difficult. Sometimes he seems like a marriage counselor as much as he is a financial counselor. And I find it very interesting because you see a lot of wild stories out there.
Yeah. Well, they say finances is a big...
And politics.
Politics and finances,
yeah.
big problems in relationships.
For sure.
Yeah, so he was trying to use a... You know, when you look at what he ended up with in doing the calculations, it looked very much like renting is the way to go.
Correct.
But it requires the renter to...
Have discipline.
And to invest a lot of money.
100%.
And here's where I think it runs into trouble. So he tried to use a real life example. He picked a house that was like $2 million.
In California, yeah.
Yeah. And if you were to purchase that house... Your mortgage is going to be $10,000 a month, right? Using round numbers.
Right.
And if you rent that apartment, if you rent that condo instead, it was like $5,000 a month. So that's a difference of $5,000 a month for 1 year, that's $60,000 and all this stuff. And you don't need the down payment.
Right. And it was a very real example. It just doesn't work for here, I don't think.
Well, here's where I think he ran into trouble, which was he said, okay, so if you, I think that example works if you have $10,000 to make that purchase. Let's say if you have the money to buy that thing for $2 million, mm-hmm. and instead of buying it for $2 million at a $10,000 a month mortgage, you rent it from somebody instead at $5,000, then you would have an additional $5,000 that you're not paying.
Right, to invest.
That you can invest.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's not how people do their housing.
Well, that's the, right, and that's the issue with the example that he gave.
Yeah.
Like for me, I would say where I live in Monmouth County, much of the mortgages and the rents are kind of even, actually.
They're kind of even, yeah.
So that's why I didn't love that example. I do like a lot of what he says, but the one thing about renting, and me and you have talked about this all the time, the difference between renting and buying is the market. That's everything. Because if you rent for 20 years, you don't pay for repairs. You don't pay for a new air conditioner. You don't pay for a new roof. You don't pay for a new hot water heater. You know, all, like for me, last year I had a pool collapse in the backyard that needed to be taken out. The ground had to be redone. Patio went in. Deck had to be closed up and fixed. And it was an expense of $16,000 that I did not see coming. If I rent that house, the owner's going to do that, not me. So a lot of the renting versus buying thing works if you have especially if you have a very stale or slow-growing market. When you have a market explosion like we've just had, you want to be buying, and you've experienced this both ways in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I had the place in Basking Ridge that I was there 9 years. I did upgrades, and I sold it for less than I bought it for, which was shocking.
Had you rented, you would have made more money and probably invested more money.
Right. Versus.
Now, but now.
Versus now where I've made money.
Right.
But I also thought, too, I've spent the last couple years paying like double my mortgage because I want to pay my house off.
Oh, okay.
But if I would have taken that money instead of paying double my mortgage
and invested it,
yeah, I'd probably be in much better shape.
That's probably true.
And I could have taken a lump sum and paid.
That's true too.
But I was trying, you know, they always say to be like, oh, you have to have a diverse portfolio. Mm-hmm. So if I'm already doing 401k, I figured, well, let me pay down my mortgage.
I don't think what you did is bad.
Yeah.
Do I think you might have more money had you done the investing instead and just continued to pay your mortgage? Probably. But you've also built in a lot more equity in your house, too, at the same time as well.
Yeah, I mean, either one is good. I'm sure I would have made more money had I put it in the stock market.
Maybe, but I don't think it's that stark of a difference. I don't. Yeah. I really don't. I mean, I could be wrong. But I think in a lot of ways, a lot of this stuff evens itself out.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a matter of how you get there.
Right. Yeah, so it was interesting, too, because he did use a real-life example. He used a really cool tool that is on the New York Times website, mm-hmm. which you can punch in different things, how long you plan to stay somewhere, yep. down payment, all this stuff. But
I think his... I'm sure not everyone's going to agree with him, just like everyone doesn't agree with Dave Ramsey or all these guys. He's become my favorite, though.
Yeah.
I like the way he thinks. I like when people have to give their monthly budget and their spending plan. And when people will send in that we spent, you know, $1,200 on groceries, he's like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's excessive. And he sees what people are spending for. And when he sees low numbers, he'll be like, that's not right. You're spending more. You're not being honest. He seems to really have an idea of what the common folk, what their expenses are every month. And I also think he's in California, which helps because he understands the higher prices.
Right.
He's not coming to us from, you know, from Iowa, where things are a lot cheaper than New York and California. So I do like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I took from that example was if you're going to rent, you need to have a couple $1,000s a month that you're investing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you're wasting money.
And when people are buying, all that money's tied up in the house.
Correct.
Right. So if you're somebody who has $8,000 a month and you either have an $8,000 mortgage or a $4,000 rent bill, you better be doing something with that other $4,000.
And not just spending it.
Not just spending it, right.
Right. Now, the one thing about the whole renting and investing thing is, I mean, it's been about 100. Yes, the market can tank. But over 100 years, it always comes back. And on average, it is essentially an 8 to 10% return as you go over through the years. The housing market goes up too. The problem with that is, like the stock market, is it can collapse, but you may not be able to wait it out. Whereas usually with your money in the stock market, you can wait it out unless you're hitting retirement age.
Yeah.
You could be in a house where all of a sudden you can't pay the mortgage. Like, you got to get out. And if you're at the wrong time, you don't make that money. You end up like you did in Basking Ridge. You end up selling your condo for a loss, comparatively speaking, to when you bought it.
But here's what I always thought about that. So, like, let's say you have a $2,000 mortgage.
Okay.
And you're in that home for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you sell it. And you sell it for the exact price you paid for it.
Right.
So that $2,000 you sent the bank every month came back to you, no?
Well, most of it's interest.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, especially the first 10 years. You really start paying off principal.
What he showed was like the first 15 years.
It might be, before it starts going the other way. I mean, before you really start hitting the principal. That's where I've always said, like, you know, and I know banks are in the business of making money too, and I understand that. But it is insane when you look at specifically mortgages, or any loans for the most part, though, how it's just like, here, you're going to pay us a fortune before we, like, you ever think if you run into trouble, and let's say it's a mortgage, for instance, and 12 years in, you actually look at how much money you've given the bank. You've paid for the house already.
Yeah.
But then if you can't make that payment, well, you owe us $200,000 still, so get out. But I kind of paid you back already. Don't work that way. It is ridiculous, yeah, the amount of interest when you think about it.
I also think it's funny, you'll hear some financial people, and they'll be like, your 30-year mortgage, the first 15 years you're going to, but if you just pay your mortgage one extra time a year, you'll save 25 years. Like, what are you talking about?
You save 8 years.
Right. Well, how is that possible?
So that, right, if you pay every other week instead of once a month.
Okay.
You're making two additional payments throughout the course of the year, where you're making 26 payments instead of, how does it work? So you're making 26 payments instead of basically 24. So those extra two payments.
Well, you should be only making one mortgage payment a month. You'd make 12
right,
a year.
But the theory being.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So if your mortgage is $2,000 a month, you're paying $1,000
every paycheck.
Every paycheck,
right.
Twice a month.
Correct. If you just pay it every 2 weeks rather than looking at the due date and you keep paying it ahead, at the end of the year, you will have made two extra $1,000 payments that goes purely to principal. So $2,000 at the end of the year has come off your balance. So if you do that for 23 years, every time you're taking more principal off, the interest comes down. And that's where I believe you saw, all kidding aside, I think you save 7 years if you do that.
Yeah.
You know who did that? Was Mike Mancuso. Do you remember that name?
I know the name, yeah.
He was like a reporter. I used to deal, I always hang out with him at the Net Games, the Garden sometimes. I remember when he first got his mortgage way back in like 1999. He said, yeah, me and my wife, we're doing this every 2 week thing. He goes, I'm going to be out of my house and I'm going to own my house in 23 years. I was like, what? And then I bought my house. The banker set up the same thing with us. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't sound. Sometimes it sounds like it's impossible, or they'll just be like, hey, you know, just make one more payment a year and you'll save 19 years off.
This will be
mortgage.
Paid off by next November.
Yeah, how is that possible?
I know.
Yeah.
It is funny.
The other, I listened to a Theo Vaughn podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This was from a couple months ago. I re-listened to some of it. He had on this guy, I can't think of the guy's, Gabor is his name. He's like some sort of professor, philosopher, and things like this. But they were talking about how your childhood could affect what you do for a living.
Okay.
So the examples he gave, I wrote them down. The example he gave is like somebody becoming a doctor because they want to feel important. And maybe they didn't feel important as a kid. And Theo Vaughn said, you know, he became a comedian, he believes, because he didn't feel seen as a kid. His mom his dad was like 70 years old when he was born. And then his mom was very busy with stuff and wasn't affectionate and all those things. So he said he didn't feel seen. And maybe that's why he became a comedian. But all the examples they were given, I couldn't help but think that if you had a nice childhood where you were treated great by your parents, you're screwed.
Yeah, right. You're destined to do nothing because you're satisfied.
Right.
Yeah, I don't
know. It was really weird to listen to.
I had a very, very nice upbringing. My parents were great. We had no issues in our home. Very middle class family. But I guess technically I'd be an example of that too, because growing up I used to announce games with my friends in front of the TV and I couldn't wait to get paid for that. I don't know that my childhood got me prepared for, but that was something we did. I don't know. That's an interesting one.
Because Gina said that to me. She goes, "Oh, you must have picked radio for a reason. You didn't feel heard as a child. Now everyone must listen to you."
No.
I said, "I don't know.
I doesn't. From what you've told me, it doesn't seem like that's the type of house you grew up in."
No, yeah, I don't feel that way. But then you could also say, like, I believe. Well, you don't know that. That might be subconsciously you didn't feel seen or heard.
I think experience too holds a lot of influence over what you do and become, because it's what you know. Like, you know, the fact that my son's going to college to do, you know, sports media and stuff, if I was a banker, he might not be doing that. But then again, my dad had nothing to do with this business, and this is what I chose. So, I mean, who knows? I will tell you one thing. Again, influence and experience. I saw my dad put a suit on every day, and leave the house at 7:30, and sometimes I get home till 7 o'clock at night. And I do remember telling my mom very young, "I don't do that."
Yeah,
I won't put a suit on. I went to why with you and bring your kid to work day that many times, and it wasn't like I didn't think his job wasn't cool, but I just remember him sitting there in the he had a big office, you know, had a great job, but it's like, why you just sit there and you're taking phone calls and you're writing stuff down? Like, to me, it was boring.
Yeah.
It just didn't interest me. So I guess, our childhood does influence what we do.
Yeah, I remember thinking, like, why not try to have a fun job?
Yes.
And if it doesn't work out, get a regular job.
Yeah, you can always have a fallback of a regular job. That is very true.
Like, I remember thinking, like, well, you got to work till you're, like, 65. So let's say I can't figure this out for 10 years. That's still a long time that I'd have to work.
That is true.
A job if I didn't like it.
Very true.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, that it means that I didn't feel heard to be.
I'm sure for some people that is true, but I would say for the vast majority that is not the case.
Yeah.
I really do think, here's a good example. So Mulaney Tire in Matawan, you used to pass it all the time. So that's Mike and Joe are Mr. Mulaney's kids. He has since passed away recently, unfortunately, but he was a business owner. He ran his tire shop and shop. And so Joe wound up taking it over. Mike went in a different direction, but had the stones and the know-how to start his own business. He's a physical therapist, opened up his own facility. Those are two guys right there that their father's influence really kind of shaped their path in a way. Joe took over for him, and Mike, a lot of people won't just start their own practice. They'd go get a job. He didn't. He just, right from the start, I'm going to start, after he finished school and his internship, he started his own practice because he knew what it was like to be a business owner.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a little bit of truth in what they're saying. I don't think, but not for everybody.
Yeah, just so anytime you listen to any of these psychologists, psychiatrist guys, there is so much that they claim gets imprinted in you, like, before you even go to school, like, when you're a baby, 1, 2, that plays out your life. It seems like so much is determined in that time where you can't even remember that part of your life.
It's very possible. I wouldn't know. I don't know. It's possible. I can only talk for myself from what I do remember and the direction I went in. You know, my sister did not grow up around divorced parents, and yet she got divorced. You know, a lot of people say that happens. You know, you'll see it from generation to generation. You know, what led to that? I don't know. Certainly wasn't being in a bad house. You know, my parents got along very well.
Yeah.
You know, my brother opted not to get married and have kids. Yet my parents married three kids. So we're all three of us are so incredibly different. I went to college and finished, had a pretty good idea of what I was going to do. My brother tried college, hated it, and has done very well without it. And my sister, like, started but wasn't into it and wound up having a family. She did end up getting divorced. Now she's pretty happy with what she's doing in her life. But you talk about three kids from the same parents in the same house.
What age difference between the three kids?
6 years between me and my sister and two between me and my brother. She's 6 years older than me. But, I mean, you want to talk about one way, another way, and a third way. Nothing is similar to what the three of us have done.
Yeah, that's why it's hard to sometimes think, like, how important those early things are in your life.
Sure.
It's also weird, like, the things, they also say the memories, your earliest memories, like, why do you still remember only a couple little things? Yeah. Like, what about those things makes you remember that?
What would you say your earliest memory is?
I have two early memories. I remember my older sister's 3 years older than me.
Okay.
I remember her going to school and me looking out the window when she was going to school. And then I remember playing with a toy motorcycle on the couch waiting for, my mother was at the hospital waiting for my sister to be born.
Mm.
So those two things. But
how old would you say you are? Like when you say...
So I had to be, I was probably three when my sister went to school. And then I was probably four when my other sister was born.
Okay.
But nothing else stands out about that other than I remember being there at that moment. But
it'd be wild if that was all unlocked.
Yeah.
Like if one day you could remember, I'm not saying when you were a baby, but let's say the time you started talking and walking. So maybe between 12 months and 18 months old, all of a sudden, like those parts of your life became crystal clear and you could see and envision what it was again.
Yeah.
Because I really don't remember much from when I was little.
What do you think, what could you recall as your first memory when someone says, what's your first memory? Do you have anything that comes to mind?
I remember being at my grandmother's house, you know. I remember preschool, I remember falling down the stairs, leaning on a door and it was open and right down the stairs I tumbled. I remember that. I remember being in the hospital, getting my tonsils out, but that was like when I was seven. We're not talking three or four, but nothing like, we were in Brooklyn, I think, till I was four. I have zero recollection of that. None.
Yeah.
Nothing. So not much. Really not till I'm seven or eight do I really remember. And I remember, I've always told you that I remember sitting down and watching the Cowboys and 49ers with my family. I remember that like it was yesterday.
And then, you would have been how old then?
I was seven. That I remember. And then the next spring going out to California to see my family out there, which where they were outside of San Francisco, and everything was 49ers, 49ers, 49ers. And it was wild. I remember that. But yeah, prior to seven, it's like a memory here, a memory. That's it. I don't remember much. I really don't.
Yeah.
I remember getting our dog. You know, it's funny. I remember getting our dog. And she was, so that's probably when we first moved into that house. We moved to Jersey. So maybe I was five. And we had her until she died when I was 17. So we had her for like 12 years,
wow.
13 years. I remember when my mom brought her home. So that might be my earliest memory. And falling down the stairs. Was around the same age, around five-ish. And maybe as I talk about it, maybe more would come out. But no, I don't, on the spot, I don't remember much.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah. And I wonder why we remember, like falling down the stairs, that would make sense. Why you remember that, getting a dog that you had for 12 years. That makes sense that you remember that.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But just other random odd things.
Yeah.
That just pop into your mind that, and then other things in that whole time frame around that, no memories.
I know. It's almost as if it didn't happen. Especially in that time where we didn't have phones and cameras and everything lives digitally.
Yeah.
Like my mom, my parents had, you know, like a lot of people with a basement, they had a flood in one of their homes in Marlboro and she lost all her photos. So like none of it really exists anymore except in your mind if you remember it. And I don't.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, you would have pictures of your birthday and Christmas.
Yes. But at least you would have that.
Yeah, you would have that.
And you know what? She used to have a lot of random vacation. Like she had tons of California pictures. Because I remember starting to go in 82. maybe it was even earlier than that, but we went every year for like 7 or 8 years to see them. The amount of California photos we had, and Florida. We went to Florida every year for vacation. She had tons of vacation photos, Christmas and birthdays.
Yeah.
That was it. I don't think she got any of them anymore.
What are your early memories, people? What significance do they hold, if any? Makes you think.
I'm sure some, yes. You can think about it.
All right, Jerry, let's do the warm-up show. I have a memory that we did that at 5 a.m. this morning.
Was that today?
That was today. Oh. And we will do it again tomorrow.
CeeLo tomorrow?
No, CeeLo Friday.
What?
Friday, you're hosting Boomer's Out Friday. You're hosting.
I am?
Mm-hmm. You on the schedule. Hostess with the mostest.
All right, then.
CeeLo's in here.
I honestly had no idea.
Yeah, Boomer Out Friday.
Oh, all right.
He actually even referenced it during one of the segments.
Okay.
Today.
Good to know.
Gio didn't know either, but I... Gio looked up to me and says, is Jerry in? I said, yes, Jerry will be in.
How about that?
And CeeLo, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see you then, Jerry. Tomorrow, though, you're warm-up show material.
Yes.
Sure!